This podcast may contain references to violence, explicit material, or sexual abuse, and may be disturbing for some listeners.
I'm Detective Senior Constable Ross Salepis from State Security Investigations Group. I don't normally do interviews like this, and I don't normally talk about WA police operations. But today, I want to tell you about the time I helped crack open an international money laundering ring in Perth, Western Australia. It's the story about a bank, a blue dress, and a whole lot of cash.
Standoff is at an end.
Police have just released
two
dramatic
shots were fired.
Man on the run tonight.
A suspect is tonight.
On the go!
Officers responding to a gunman was holding up to the corner.
This is Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast.
Hello, I'm Sandra DiGirolamo. It was the most unbelievable coincidence and incredible attention to detail that led Detective Senior Constable Ross Salepis to that crime racket. For a well-organised crime, one crook made a rookie mistake and the man sitting in front of me used it to unravel an entire web. Ross, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to get to that moment in time, that sliding doors moment, I suppose, very soon, because it is a cracker, the way this case plays out and all that cash floating in bags around the CBD. It's a ripper, so we're going to get to that soon. But firstly, off the top, in your intro, you said that you're with state security. Is that counterterrorism?
It's one of the things that we do. State security looks at the security of the state. So we look after a wide variety of things, but counterterrorism is certainly one of the main things we look at. But we also look at threats to police officers, threats to judges.
So you're talking about extremists though, right?
Part of the state security job is to look at some extreme views, certainly.
And, yeah, I like the way you put some extreme views.
Some extreme views.
Okay, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do we have people with extreme views in WA? Do we have a lot of them?
There's not a lot. Comparatively speaking, it's low. However, that doesn't stop us as the police having a responsibility for ensuring it stays at low.
A counterterrorism unit like yours, I would say it's probably one of the most secretive units within any police force anywhere in the world. What exactly do you do?
Well, there's many things that I sort of can't talk about that we do. There's many things.
Okay, hold on. Yeah. I watch Netflix.
Yeah.
phone taps, undercover cops. I mean, is that the kind of stuff that you're doing?
I mean, if you get a look at, you know, the TV, we act lawfully. So we use all lawful methods to gain information. We never act unlawfully with the police, obviously. Our job is to work within the law. But I can't really go into specifics. I think you've maybe touched on the right areas that we work in. We work with a lot of agencies. You'd be surprised exactly who, and the full scope I can't really talk about. But if you think about international agencies like the CIA, I mean, that's widely known that WA Police work with partner agencies and we have a strong relationship with the CIA.
I feel like you're about to say it's classified and I can't say it anymore. But I do, Ross, in all seriousness, I hear you choosing your words very carefully when you talk about this. Is that because you think that the people that you are protecting us from could be listening to this podcast? Is that why you're choosing your words so carefully?
Well, yes, and there's other reasons. Like, lawfully, I'm required to. For me to get my vetting level, to be allowed to get access to information, we have to be careful about what we disclose. But also, yeah, the people on a criminal level that could listen to us and understand about our tactics and what we do to keep people safe, we want to make sure that those tools are as useful as possible as they can be.
Okay, I'm here with Senior Constable Ross Salepis, and we're about to talk about a massive money laundering bust that played out here in Perth. This is the lady in the blue dress. Ross, I think sometimes when people hear money laundering, they don't get it. The detail can seem a bit high level. So take me back to basics for a second. What is money laundering?
Okay, well, the term itself, money laundering, is a kind of a play on words because you're cleaning money. However, what I learned about being in it is that often what it looks like, as opposed to cleaning it, is moving it. That's the problem with money, is that you have to be able to move large amounts safely. And money launderers can't just walk into a bank or a transfer and say, can you move this money for it? Because we'll see that money movement. And if we see it as police, we can understand and intercept it and try and figure out what its source is. We could take the money and we could charge the people. So I've found in my experience as a money laundering detective is about that movement, the safe movement of cash.
Cash that they've got through some illegal, you know, selling drugs, yeah, selling firearms, something.
Yeah, the offence actually says it's the proceeds of a crime. Okay. So it's moving or transferring money, that's the proceeds of a crime. If a money launderer is good to the casual observer, they can make their money look lawful.
You're listening to Persons of Interest, and we're talking money laundering with Detective Senior Constable Ross Salepas. I'm going to take you back to Monday, the 20th of January, 2020. I bet you had no idea that would be the day that you would set off a chain reaction that would be the undoing of an international money laundering syndicate.
I remember it well. It was Monday afternoon and, you know, police, like everybody else, I guess. Monday's sometimes not your favourite day. You've just had the weekend. So I was looking forward to going home. And so was the rest of the office. And I remember it was hot. So it was a really hot, sunny day and the sun was streaming in. I was thinking, thank goodness I'll get to go home in half an hour. One of the sergeants got a phone call. And it was one of those phone calls that you never forget in your career because it was... We built very good relationships with the community, the bank community, and one of the members of the security team in the bank community told us, we think we've got somebody engaging in money laundering, what they call cuckoo smurfing activity.
What is that?
Okay, so cuckoo smurfing, it's a great party trick to, if you can understand what cuckoo smurfing is, because it's a really interesting concept. What it does is it hides a cash movement, the money laundering syndicates, will move some cash. So what they'll do is they'll have some cash in Australia that they want to move to another country. Let's say, for example, a country in Asia. So they want to move $100,000 to Asia. Well, they can't just walk into a bank and with their $100,000 that's come from drug sales, because that money doesn't really exist electronically anywhere. It's come from drugs. It's illegal money. So instead, they engage the services of a money laundering syndicate. Money laundering syndicate gives that $100,000 to what's known as the Smurfs.
So the Smurfs are the bad guys as well?
They are, yes. The Smurfs are people who are paid by the money laundering syndicate to make deposits.
Smurfs were never the bad guys when I was a kid.
Yeah. At the same time in the Asian country, the money laundering syndicate organises for some legitimate people in that country who have legitimate transfers that they want to make. So these people are making legitimate transfers. And so there's two sets of money. There's $100,000 in Australia and $100,000 worth of the other currency in the country. So what happens is that the money launderers give the foreign currency to wherever the person that was in Australia, the drug syndicate, let's say, wants that money to go for, usually to pay for things like drugs. The Smurfs have got the $100,000 and they make those deposits into bank accounts for the people on behalf of the money launderer in the Asian country.
So I just want to make sure I understand it. There are the Smurfs, there are the, let's say that they're drug runners. Mm-hmm. They give the $100,000 to the Smurfs.
Yes.
The Smurfs then hold that illegal $100,000, they're the middleman. Then the Smurfs dish it out to someone else who thinks that that's clean.
Yeah, they give it in less than $10,000 deposits because $10,000 is the threshold for AUSTRAC to know about that deposit.
Oh.
And they do the deposits into the cuckoos. So the analogy continues that cuckoos have a false egg in them that they don't know about.
The cuckoos are the good guys. They don't know what's going on.
They're just normal they're
people,
citizens.
They're people that are just waiting for their money. They get some money.
That's
they might
it.
Be doing some trade with Asia. Or
yeah, usually. So that, just using that analogy, it might be that they're expecting $20,000 from a family member in Asia to pay for some school fees. Okay. All they see is $20,000 go in increments less than $10,000 into their bank account. So as far as they're concerned, it's lawful money. And that person hasn't committed an offence. The person sending the money hasn't committed an offence. But the money that's been used to make that transaction happen comes from unlawful activity.
Oh, I think I'm confused. I want to make sure it makes sense. Let me explain it to see if I've got it right. The drug runners in Australia have given the money launderers, let's say it's $20,000 in cash, that they want to send to their boss, their mates in Asia. The money is in Australia, it's illegal, and they want it to be in Asia.
That's right.
The money launderers, with the help of the Smurfs, deposit that $20,000 of drug money into an Australian bank account. It actually doesn't go to Asia at all. The cash, the dirty cash, physically gets deposited at a bank into the account of an innocent person who's expecting the money here in Australia. The Smurf has deposited the money. And so when it turns up in the Australian account of, let's say it's that student who's expecting their school fees, they think it's the same money that their family have sent from Asia, so they don't ask any questions. Meanwhile, the money that the family in Asia is sending never really leaves Asia at all. That money instead from the family in Asia who are sending it to pay for school fees in Australia, they send that money through a third-party transfer company, and within that third party, somehow the money is diverted to the syndicate's Asian operation. So everyone has their money. There's two sets of money. Everyone has their money and nobody really knows what's happened, right?
Absolutely. You could be a money launderer because you've got the you've got the concept of it.
Police, can you not get on the ramp?
Fire and security.
On the ground.
Out of the driver's door.
You're listening to Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast. If you want to be part of the action, visit letsjoinforces.wa.gov.au to find out more.
All right, now let's go back to this story. So you get the phone call. So what do?
First of all, we kitted up and then we jumped into our car and just drove. We were based quite close to the city, but we always drive in just in case we need the vehicle. And we had a very, very limited description. So we were just told it was a man and a woman. They were going around to the different banks, lots of different banks, and making all of these deposits, lots of money, under $10,000. So we jumped into the car and just started walking, myself and my colleague, just started walking around to the banks, seeing if we get any more information and starting the CCTV canvas to see if we could get some images of this person.
You went to a bank and saw the CCTV.
Yes.
Tell me what you saw on that.
So it was a couple, both with big, full bags, but they're both very well-dressed. If you walk past them in the city, you wouldn't think anything different. But the lady had a very distinctive blue tartan dress on, like a high-end branded dress.
Sounds very Ocean's 11 in the money laundering.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point. They don't want to attract attention to themselves. And, you know, it makes sense that somebody very well-dressed might deposit a lot of cash in the city. So in that respect, they weren't counting, I guess, on the banks talking to each other and saying, do you think it was odd that this person was coming in and depositing a lot of money?
You've seen the CCTV. You see that there's a woman in a distinctive blue tartan dress. You've got this vision. Normally, what would happen next?
So normally, we would have the CCTV and then we'd start working backwards from that to identify the person. So in my mind, that's what we were going to do for this job. I still thought I was going home after my Monday at work. So we called it a day and the bosses said, okay, yes, we'll start on the CCTV, look, go back to the office and see if we can identify this person so that we could identify where they are and keep working on the job. And that's when I was walking down the middle of Murray Street Mall. And as we were walking back to the car, I saw the blue tartan dress.
Bingo!
So, yeah, it was an amazing, it was quite good because it was one of those moments in your career, I call them gotcha moments, where you're like, yes, you know, you've seen this person. I was really excited about it because it's rare to catch a cuckoo Smurf in the act like that. And I remember saying to my partner, I think that's them, you know, like I was like, is that them? Is that her? And he was like, yes, I think it is. So we were all systems go from that point.
All systems go. I assume that means you've walked up to her.
Yeah, so I walked up to her and I arrested her on suspicion of money laundering.
When you go up to her and you arrest her, mm-hmm. What does she say to you?
I think she was shocked. I didn't think she expected us to see there. And she kind of just sort of played dumb a little bit as if she didn't understand what was happening. Very quickly, we established that she was carrying a large amount of money.
How much?
She was carrying $37,000 there and then. And we established that very, very quickly and just by looking into her bags.
So what, was it in like in the movies, in bundles?
Well, it was in bundles of less than $10,000 with post-it notes on it.
Post-it notes for what, each bank she was about?
Exactly, for the transactions. So she was a little bit unlucky in the respect that I arrested her, because it's rare that you can, that a money laundering detective maybe would come across somebody like this. So we knew exactly what it was. She was, I think, shocked.
She had something else on her as well.
Yeah, she had a hotel key. So that was of interest to us, because the second thing that we always try and look for after we catch a cuckoo smurf or a money launderer is where they keep the rest of their money. So we were very excited about that hotel key.
You've got the hotel key. I assume she goes back to the station, you go to the hotel.
No, actually, she came with us to the hotel. So, when we conduct searches, if someone's under arrest and you're going to search a property belonging to them, in order to give them their occupier's rights, which is their ability to know that as an occupier what you're doing in their property and what lawful authority you're exercising, we give them those. So we brought her along to the hotel.
Okay. Which hotel did you go to?
It was the Ibis Hotel in central Perth. I think it's on Murray Street, the end of Murray Street.
And when you turn up at a hotel like that, how does it work? I mean, this is a hotel in the middle of the city. I'm guessing that you and your mates don't exactly blend in to the rest of the hotel patrons. So what happens when you...
No, I mean, usually they're fine about it. Obviously, we sit there in the middle, we come in, there's usually six detectives or police officers that do a search. And so you're right, we do stand out. And sometimes we might have somebody in handcuffs as well. So we didn't in this instance, but sometimes we may do that. So hotels are usually quite good because you explain what you're there for. If you show them what lawful authority you have to search their property, they're very cooperative usually, and they're quite happy to help you, particularly if it means that you don't have to force entry into a room.
You open the hotel room door.
Yes.
What do you find?
There was a further $20,000 in a suitcase. So there was a few suitcases, and there was a mobile phone that we looked at. And actually that led to, as part of our investigations, we obviously look at, it's no secret that we look at mobile phones and we look at what's in them. And we were able to look inside this one and discover that this person was not from this state. We call them, this is just a term that we use, FIFO for Cuckoo Smurf. So they were fly in, fly out. They'd been brought in specifically to launder some money in this state. And then their plan was to go back. And looking at that phone, we could see evidence of a lot more money laundering than the money that we found so far. Wow. So there was, what we look for specifically is receipts. As you know, when you go to an ATM, you get a receipt for that transaction. Well, for the cuckoo smurf, that receipt is proof to their handler or to their boss or their overseer that the transaction's taken place. And they can provide those receipts to them. When those bosses have a certain amount of receipts for a transaction, they can let the handlers back in the target country know that, yes, your money's gone through, you should expect it within a certain amount of time. So we found a lot of those receipts. We found them physically, and we found evidence on the mobile phone as well.
She'd taken photos of them.
Yeah, that's how they let their handler know. So they take a mobile phone and send it back to their handler.
What, and text it to their...
Yeah. Well, actually, not text. Sometimes they use other platforms to send those messages. But yeah, they send it back and that's how they communicate.
And so had she been communicating with someone from another country?
She'd been communicating with someone in this country, but that person in this country was just the handler in this country. It was international. So the payments she was making were international payments into Western Australia. They were being directed from other countries.
What did the messages say?
Oh, they weren't very complicated. They were just like, done this and... Here's the receipt. However, looking back, we could track through their movements. So that's when the investigation gets interesting, because you can then look and see where they've taken photos of where they've been. And as an investigator, then the job is to go and get the CCTV to corroborate that. We look at how much money did they actually deposit. We can go back using those receipts to the ATMs to get the CCTV to see the people in the very distinctive blue dress making those deposits.
So do you then have to, is it your job, to tell the people who received that money? So these are the innocent people who had this money deposited into their account. Mm-hmm. They had no idea what was going on. Do you have to tell them, and do they have to give it back?
No, they don't have to give it back. You see, those people haven't committed an offence. It's not their responsibility to ensure that the people that are transferring their money are doing it legally. So in a way, they're innocent victims. So We do sometimes speak to those people. We have to as part of the investigation process. And usually it's just to tell us, how did you go by this money? How did you organise it? Particularly, we're interested in who they contacted, because that can often give us part of the investigation and to uncover the ring, I guess. But really, those people haven't committed an offence. You know, I'd stress that. And they're usually quite surprised when you speak to them.
I bet. And as far as this case is concerned, it's all thanks to that blue tartan dress.
I think, though, if she hadn't have had that blue tartan dress on, if she'd have just been wearing a darker colour and something less standout, it really was a really nice dress. So it really caught my eye. Her partner was just wearing like a polo shirt or something, so I would have missed him. But yeah, that blue dress, I'll never forget seeing it on that sunny day in January.
Bet she wishes she'd worn khaki that day.
Yes, I bet she does.
Ross, that's a pretty big get. What's your background to be able to chase down an international money laundering ring like this? Are you a forensic accountant?
No, I wish I was a forensic accountant, because they're very intelligent people. But my background is not accountancy, although I do have a degree in business studies, but that was from my previous life before I became a police officer. So,
hold on a minute. What was your previous life before you became a police officer?
So comparatively, I guess, to my colleagues, joined quite late. I had a career change when I was 32. I was a human resource manager in a lot of, well, various sectors, prison. I actually worked in mining as well in Western Australia here.
Why then did you become a cop? Because surely the money would have been better in mining.
It certainly was attractive. In Western Australia, the money in mining was attractive. However, it wasn't really giving me what I wanted. I always felt like I wanted to do something to serve. I wanted to be out and about and something a bit exciting.
And you're still studying now?
I am, yeah. So WA Police is pretty cool. They're pretty cool employers. They have some programs where if you wish to study, part of that, you can get a percentage of your course paid back to you. So I'm studying a Bachelor of Policing Investigations, and I'm on the cusp of applying for a master's degree in counterterrorism as well.
When you first start in the force, you spend some time in uniform, don't you? Everyone spends some time in uniform.
That's right, yeah.
And then you need to kind of pick your path.
Yes, yeah.
From there.
Yeah, that's right. So everybody starts the same way at the Western Australia Police. You start in uniform, and the vast range of different things that you do is just amazing and really interesting and really fun at times.
Like what?
Probably the sort of the most insane thing that ever happened to me. Well, not insane, but the weirdest thing that ever happened to me was we were all sitting in the office one day, listening to the radio, waiting for a job to come in, catching up on the previous job. And there was this call that there'd been a crash. A truck full of chickens, and I'm talking thousands of chickens, had rolled over on Nangara
live
Road.
Live chickens?
Yep, live chickens. And they were everywhere. So,
The truck carrying live chickens had rolled.
It had rolled over, and the chickens had escaped, essentially. So, that's... you almost didn't believe it when you read it, and I didn't know what to make of it when I went, no, people had been hurt. But we went down, and obviously there were all these chickens that were down there, and it was like a scene from a movie. There was sort of chickens on trees and chickens on roundabouts.
No.
And the danger was that there was chickens like running across the roads, and people weren't just driving through the chickens. They were, it was causing a hazard, and there was a danger. Yeah.
So what was your job?
So our job was to keep everybody safe, but also we had to deal with this chicken. So you can't put the chickens in the back of the van and, what do you do? But we do work with other agencies, and in the detective world, that can be international agencies. In this case, it was the RSPCA. So we called them up, and they were amazing. They deployed about four or five officers, but then they got volunteers to come down and help us.
Are you physically running around getting these chickens?
I was there for the public safety. I ended up getting a few of these chickens just to get them off the road. And then the media arrived, and a picture was taken of me rescuing chickens. And of course...
Oh, you've made it when that turns up in the paper.
Yeah, that was it. And of course that was published. And I still hear about that from my colleagues, actually.
Thank you, Ross. This has been so interesting. I want to know more about the counterterrorism stuff, but I also want you to keep me safe, so I know why you can't go into it. So thank you. But we are really grateful for your time. Actually, before I do let you go, did you end up catching all of the chickens?
Well, I hope so. we caught a lot of them. I do know that one happy story was that the RSPCA, they did officially adopt one of the chickens. and that chicken had a long and happy life. So, you know.
WA police saving lives every day.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. I always tell people it's the busiest crash I've ever went to.
Well, thank you, Ross. And thank you to our audience for listening in. You have been listening to Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast. If a job like Ross's sounds interesting to you, working in state security, counterterrorism, or catching these international money laundering syndicates, or even chasing those chooks around a roundabout, if any of that sounds like something you want to do, why not see if WA Police will have you? My name is Sandra Di Girolamo. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the WA Police podcast. You can keep listening to the action, or you can be part of it. Visit letsjoinforces.wa.gov.au to find out more.
The Persons of Interest podcasts have given a rare insight into real cases with real cops. If you've enjoyed listening, you can stay tuned for more WA Police Force podcasts. The second Cold Case Western Australia series is coming soon and will examine some enduring unsolved murders. This could be your chance to help solve these terrible crimes, so please listen and call Crime Stoppers if you have any information.